All right. This is Elle Zealous Marchant. I have in the studio Emily Gorsinski, a data scientist who accidentally found activism through investigating the lack of quality control for voter machines. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you very much.
So, accidental activism. Do tell.
Yeah, so this was kind of an interesting path. I've always been sort of politically active, but never anything on any sort of major scales or anything like that. And all throughout last year, I was looking for ways to bring my expertise in the tech industry into some more activist roles. And I was just, frankly, I was bored one day. The day after Thanksgiving, I had the day off. I had nothing to do. And I just started questioning, what is the software like for voting machines? What's the engineering process like? And is it tested? Is it quality controlled? Are there federal regulations that govern how it's written? And I did a bunch of research into the problem and found that there are federal standards, but they're all voluntary and they vary state by state. And as I dug into the process of certifying voting machines, which is an optional process, I found that they don't meet what I would consider in the tech industry to be anything near good engineering practice or good engineering standards.
So by voluntary, you mean those who are creating the voter machines have the choice to go through a quality control process?
It's up to the states and sometimes the localities. One of the interesting things about voting is that there's actually no such thing as a federal election in the United States. There's no, we don't elect anybody to federal office. Everything is state level. Even the president is, we vote in our state for how our electoral college members will vote for the president. So the federal government doesn't have a whole lot of authority to regulate voting machines. So it's left up to the states to decide whether they want to certify them or not, to what extent they must adhere to the guidelines that the federal government has developed. But there is no mandate. There is no requirement to say, this is how you should must build a voting machine. It's not like, you know, this is how you must build a bridge or this is how you must build a road. So it's a very interesting problem, and it varies state by state.
Is there, what would you say is the percentage of states in the continental U.S. that are actually regulating their voting machines?
For full adherence to the voting machine standards, I believe there's only like 12 or 13 states that require it. There are 12 states that, I believe it's 12 states that don't require any certification at all. You could just build a machine and say, here you go, buy it. Give me $100,000 per machine or whatever it is. And there's no testing requirements at all. And then the rest of the states have something in between where they maybe they don't have to meet all of the certification guidelines, but they have to meet part of them.
That seems like a really dangerous loophole in the world where there's a lot of security information, voter fraud, not just in the United States, but worldwide. I remember several years ago, it was all a talk that, oh my goodness, you know, these countries in South America, like they don't even know whether the votes are real because they're being hacked and, you know, and then there was, oh, could it happen to the United States? And then there, I feel like, was several of us that were like, who were involved in data or talking with data scientists going, it's already happening. And there's nothing to really stop that because there's no regulation. So do you think that's contributing to that, you know, being a bigger possibility here in the U.S.?
Absolutely. We know that some of these voting machines are being used overseas in countries like the Philippines. And there are documented issues of voting machines throwing errors and giving false counts in the Philippines. But in addition to that, there's recently in the news, there's been a lot of concern about whether the election rolls were hacked, the registration databases, and whether or not the machines were hacked. And the Intel community reports acknowledges that in particular, the Russian government did attempt to breach those machines and breach those databases, and a lot of information has been dumped. Now, the big question is, did they actually affect vote tallies? getting into the machines is one thing, but did they actually go so far as to modify the outcome of the election by changing the votes? And that is uncertain. But the problem is we didn't do any forensic analysis. We didn't do any verification of the totals on many of those machines. So the simple fact is we don't know. Computer security experts have been looking into voting machine security for a while. In 2004, it became a big issue. It's, again, a big issue. They're definitely vulnerable. They use software that is out of date. But that's not the only vector through which, you know, somebody can do harm to these machines and affect election outcomes.
Who are the companies that are making this? You mentioned Intel. So did that indicate that they are actually designing or have a part in?
When I say Intel, I mean the intelligence community. The companies that are making them, there's a few different companies. ESNS, which I believe stands for Election Systems and Services, but don't quote me on that. They're based in Omaha. They make several of the machines. And Diebold, they are now under a different name, which I cannot remember for the life of me. But they also make voting machines. There's about 4 or 5 companies that currently have certified voting machines in the United States. And there are 2 laboratories that test them for software and hardware quality.
Just 2 companies that test them for the quality.
Yeah, there,
which is up for debate because that's not regulated.
That's correct. Now, those software company or those testing laboratories, they are regulated in as far as what it takes to become an actual testing facility for voting machines. It's actually much harder to become a testing laboratory for voting machines than it is to become a voting machine manufacturer. And there were 3. There are now only 2 that are currently in sort of the roles as far as we can legally give you the stamp of approval for these machines. So almost everything that is done is run through them. And so they basically apply the same principles, the same testing practices to all of the machines.
Do we know who these 2 or 3 companies are that are doing the testing? Or
We do. I can't remember them off the top of my head. They have very nondescript names.
Sure.
I didn't, unfortunately, write them down. I did write up a summary of all of this, which is, I have it available online. I can make it available to you, too.
That'd be great.
That does document, like, who the testing labs are, what their policies are, and what their practices are.
That'd be great. So the next big question for Wyatt, a couple, but firstly, I mean, who's funding these companies that are regulating the basic quality of the machines, and who are the companies that are building them? Is it just that anybody, Joe Schmo, could say, I'm going to build a voting machine and start doing that? And
yeah, there are actually people that are trying to do that and trying to open source voting machines, which is very interesting. The companies doing it right now, as far as the funding, that all comes from us as taxpayers through our municipal and state taxes. Now, I believe in Oregon, it's all paper voting. I don't think there's any electronic machines in the entire state. So
not yet.
Y'all are great. but where I'm from in Virginia, we have these voting machines are electronic, and every county is allowed to choose what they want to do as far as their voting practices. So it varies county to county and sometimes precinct to precinct. And yeah, those are purchased with taxpayer dollars, and it's a for-profit operation.
So just for clarification, anybody, there's open source, which would be just anybody off the street saying, I could do that, and I'm going to build that. And then but that would indicate then that there's a government projects where they're probably contracting with people to build these machines. And then, but both avenues are going to be tax funded by the people.
In a sense, open source development is often community funded and community contributed, where people who are engineers, software engineers, electrical engineers will effectively donate their time and their expertise, which is great. And in the technology industry, the open source movement has been a really strong force for democratizing technology and making it available. There is a huge barrier to entry. It's not like anybody can just pick up and say, I want to build a voting machine. You need to have expertise in mechanical engineering and electrical engineering. But people are passionate about this, and even if it was just possible to get an existing physical device and rewrite the software that goes on it, by open sourcing it, it makes it so that everyone can see what that software is actually doing and look for bugs and look for flaws and look for security problems. And there would be no question as to whether the votes that are coming out are actually correct.
What's the case for having an electronic voting machine that you hear as your data gathering versus something paper?
I have never heard a single compelling argument for the voting systems that we use for having an electronic voting machine.
Well, Emily Gorsinski, thank you so much for joining us on KVU. Thank you very much. This is Zelle Swells and Rashant.